Hello, I'm John Dennis. It's Wednesday the 15th of July. Today, a British advisor to the World Health Organization on swine flu says experts were caught napping by the outbreak.
He says they'd expected it to sort of have a number of cases and then peter out. And in fact, it's become a very similar to winter flu. Hundreds of hospitalizations, tens of thousands of people going to see their GP.
Also today, Dick Cheney's secret plan to send CIA death squads into foreign countries to assassinate top terrorists.
Put men on the ground, units on the ground, both CIA and military, quietly going even into friendly countries and assassinating people they thought were key operatives.
And the man behind Twitter, Biz Stone, talks to The Guardian. But first, here's Bill Overton with the news and today's papers.
As the head of the World Health Organization warns there won't be a swine flu vaccine for several months, scientists say the government isn't doing enough to map the spread of the disease. Researchers at Imperial College London say improved figures need to be kept on how many people die from the virus so doctors can prepare better for the autumn flu season. They predict that of the people who are sick enough to visit a doctor, one in 200 could go on to die. In Israel, soldiers who fought in the Gaza conflict have described being urged to shoot without first identifying targets as civilians or combatants. The testimonies come in a report from Breaking the Silence, a campaign group made up of Israeli soldiers. In it, they say they were urged to fire on any building or person that seemed suspicious and admitted that people were sometimes used as human shields. Israel denies breaking the laws of war and has dismissed the report as hearsay. More than 12,000 postal workers at a strike on Friday. The Communication Workers Union have announced members in several cities, including Edinburgh, Bristol and London, will walk out for 24 hours. It's the latest in a series of strikes that have hit parts of the UK. The union accuses Royal Mail of cutting pay and jobs without agreement and reducing services. Royal Mail's accusing the union of resisting modernisation and claims 90% of staff will be at work on Friday. A fifth of English local authorities are reporting increased pressure on school places due to the recession. The survey by the Local Government Association says parents may be abandoning private education for the state sector. Schools are also having to cope with a rise in requests for free school meals. The government's going to announce £200 million to overcome the shortage of places. And a 19-year-old British backpacker missing in Australia for 12 days has been found alive in the outback by two bushwalkers. Jamie Neal from Muswell Hill in North London went missing in dense bushland in the Blue Mountains, west of Sydney. In sport, Mark Cavendish has won the third stage of this year's Tour de France after a sprint in the last 200 metres. But Britain's Bradley Wiggins has dropped out of the top five after being involved in a crash near the finish line. And in football, Carlos Tevez has spoken out to deny Alex Ferguson's claim that he tried to keep the player at Manchester United. Tevez, who has signed for Manchester City, says Ferguson didn't do enough to keep him at the club. Now, let's take a look at the morning papers and the spread of swine flu dominating the front pages. The Guardian has an interview with the Director General of the World Health Organization, Margaret Chan, who says a vaccine won't be available for several months. Ministers have claimed the first stocks of a vaccine will be in the UK by August, but Dr. Chan says evidence from clinical trials won't be available for another 2 or 3 months. The Telegraph leads with the research from Imperial College London that suggests one in 200 patients who become seriously ill could die. But the Express claims swine flu panic is sweeping Britain. They report thousands of people ignoring requests to stay calm and are overwhelming emergency phone lines with demands for antiviral drugs like Tamiflu. The paper quotes the chairman of the British Medical Association, Dr. Lawrence Buckman, who says the majority of people will get better by taking paracetamol. Photographs of the bodies of British soldiers who died in Afghanistan are on the front of almost every paper. The Independent says research commissioned by the Conservative Party suggests suicide and mental illness are on the rise among young army veterans. The Daily Mail focuses on the grief of the soldiers' families and the huge crowds that lined the streets as the coffins passed through Wootton Bassett in Wiltshire. And the Times chooses to go with the story of the British conductor and his wife who died together at a Swiss suicide clinic. Reports that Sir Edward Downes was not fatally ill have led to renewed criticism of voluntary euthanasia from pro-life campaigners. For more on all those stories and updates throughout the day, go to guardian.co.uk.
Seventeen people in the UK have died so far after contracting swine flu. More than 335 people have been treated in hospital for the virus. But a swine flu expert who advises the World Health Organization says the virus could become more deadly. Dr. Alan Hay is director of the World Influenza Centre based in London, and he says scientists were caught napping by the outbreak. James Stirk has the details.
Alan Hay has been surprised about the intensity and general spread of the swine flu outbreak in the summer, this summer in Britain. He says that they'd expected it to sort of have a number of cases and then peter out. And in fact, it's become a sort of very similar to sort of winter flu outbreaks, quite prolonged, hundreds of hospitalizations, tens of thousands of people going to see their GP. And it's taken people by surprise.
And what does he think will happen next?
Well, a number of things along the lines that he expects the summer outbreak to calm down within the next week or two, but he does expect it to come back in the autumn. No one's quite sure what's going to happen between now and the autumn, whether or not it's going to change and become more virulent, more deadly in a sort of more layman's term, or not. And because so many people have had it now, one of the interesting things he said was that it actually may not affect so many people in the autumn on the grounds that you're unlikely to get it twice. On the other hand, that may all be wishful thinking.
But I mean, most importantly, he's warned the Department of Health to be prepared for a potentially more deadly virus.
Yeah, I think the Department of Health would certainly say that it has had plans in place for severe pandemic for a number of years. But he does stress that there is a very strong concern in his own mind that what has been to date a quite a mild form of the flu virus for the vast majority of people could change into something really quite tricky and nasty. And that being the case, the Department of Health certainly needs to plan for that possibility.
And what does the Department of Health say?
Department of Health says that it is at the front of the queue for a flu vaccine as and when it starts getting produced. Andy Burnham, the Health Secretary, told the Commons earlier this month that the first batches would start arriving in the UK in August. But one of the things which Dr. Hay does pick up on is that there'll only be a very small number of batches arriving in August. And he says it's all very well to say that, but there won't be any significant quantities for a number of weeks after that. However, by the time when we might expect winter flu to arrive, there should be a significant stockpile of vaccine.
James Stirk, and there's full coverage at guardian.co.uk/swineflu. Also on The Guardian's website today, David Blanchflower, the former member of the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee, he says that British economic history warns us to beware of false dawns, and those politicians who want spending cuts now are wrong. Have your say at guardian.co.uk/comment is free. Ed Pilkington looks at the coolest mayor in America. That's at guardian.co.uk/America. And Jonathan Powell, or is it Powell? I can never remember. The former chief of staff to Tony Blair, on when it's acceptable to wake up a world leader in the middle of the night. guardian.co.uk/politics. I'm John Dennis. Coming up in Guardian Daily, Charles Taylor begins his defence at the International Court in The Hague, where he's accused of war crimes in Sierra Leone. But first, the CIA planned to send small teams of agents abroad to assassinate al-Qaeda leaders. US government officials say the CIA didn't carry out their proposals and that the plans were scrapped last month. The former Vice President Dick Cheney ordered the plans to be kept hidden from politicians, as Chris McGreal reports from Washington.
The plan had its genesis in the post-9/11 era when the federal government and the CIA itself was casting around for all kinds of ways to deal with what they saw as a considerable terrorist threat. And under discussion was a plan to assassinate and to abduct al-Qaeda leaders and al-Qaeda operatives. Now, that plan went ahead in many ways. We've seen it over the years with both rendition and with the drone attacks, which continue to these days. But the part of the plan was to put men on the ground, units on the ground, both CIA and military, modelled a little bit on the Israeli idea of the Mossad, quietly going even into friendly countries and assassinating people they thought were key operatives inside al-Qaeda, who they may not be able to put on trial, they may not be able to abduct, but they could kill them. And the idea was that that would be done perhaps without the knowledge even of some of the governments concerned, even if they were friendly, because whilst they might be considered on side, they were also considered unreliable, untrustworthy.
Now, the head of the CIA has said that this program has been discontinued. Do we know why it's been curtailed?
Well, it seems that in the case of the CIA, it never really got off the ground, or at least that's what the CIA has told Congress. In the case of the military, it did get off the ground, and part of the reason it seems to have been curtailed is that there were some assassinations by the US military that then had political repercussions. It was told to me by a very senior ex-CIA official who knew, had knowledge of this program, that one of them was in Kenya. That proved to be particularly embarrassing. He did not say who it was. I suspect it's highly likely that it was somebody, a Somali connected to Al-Qaeda, because that's been a particular problem for the Americans recently. But the official line from the CIA, anyway, is that whilst there was planning over 8 years, it never got off the ground.
And Dick Cheney, the former vice president under George Bush, he wanted Congress to know nothing about these plans.
Yes, I mean, I think it's important to remember that this is one plan amongst many and one of a number of kind of operations that Cheney kept secret. And they varied from everything from this kind of plan through to, we now know because of revelations in recent days, that there was much more widespread surveillance going on than anybody had realized, and that it bordered on the illegal, is widely deemed to have been unnecessary and certainly not garnered the kind of intelligence that would have been used to justify it. And it seems that Dick Cheney and the Bush administration regarded all of this stuff as so completely secret that it shouldn't be revealed.
Chris McGreal. Charles Taylor, the former leader of Liberia, has begun his defence at his war crimes trial in The Hague. He's the first African leader to be tried by an international court, and he faces 11 counts, including murder, sexual slavery, and using child soldiers in his support for rebels in Sierra Leone. Zan Rice has the story.
Charles Taylor is accused of 11 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity, including things such as rape, murder, the use of child soldiers, looting, pillaging. And this occurred in Sierra Leone between 1996 and 2002. And for most of this time, Taylor was president of neighbouring Liberia.
Charles Taylor was leader of Liberia. Why is he being accused of events that happened in Sierra Leone?
Well, Taylor is accused of being a friend of the leader of the Revolutionary United Front rebels who fought a war in Sierra Leone between 1991 and 2002, which killed tens of thousands of people. And Taylor is accused of backing them with arms and instruction and other logistical help in return for payments in blood diamonds from Sierra Leone's very rich diamond fields. And this was a war to a large degree about diamonds. And the allegation is that Taylor was paid vast sums in diamonds.
Now, Charles Taylor has become the first African leader to stand trial for war crimes in The Hague. He's begun to set out his defence. What has he said?
He's basically said that the prosecution case is based on lies, misinformation and rumour, that he's not guilty of any of the crimes that he's accused of. People are out to get him. He professed to have a love for humanity, described himself as a family man, and said that over the next few weeks of his testimony, he'll prove that he's innocent of all charges.
Do we know what he's going to come up with?
We don't. I mean, the defence has named more than 240 potential witnesses who will testify on his behalf. But the prosecution's already set out a fairly strong case in more than a year of witness calling, and the allegations are pretty horrific.
Now, a verdict is expected next year. How is Charles Taylor's trial regarded in Africa?
Well, Taylor, needless to say, Taylor doesn't have a very good reputation. There hasn't been too many people saying, you know, this is a threat to Africa's sovereignty, or we don't support the ICC, well, the special court's decision, special court for Sierra Leone in this case. As has been the case with the Sudan's president Omar al-Bashir, who's been indicted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes. So I think people are watching very carefully and hoping for a verdict that reflects what Taylor did during his years in power.
Zan Rice. The microblogging site Twitter began life in 2006. It's now the world's hottest internet company. It's attracted famous users such as Stephen Fry and Oprah Winfrey, and it's played an important role for anti-government activists in countries like Iran and China, where oppressive regimes try to control communication networks. Biz Stone is one of the company's co-founders, and he invited Bobby Johnson, our technology correspondent, to Twitter's headquarters in San Francisco.
Communication and the open exchange of information in general is a positive impact on the world, and that's happening. Many companies are doing this. It's becoming increasingly important, and it's becoming increasingly valuable for people everywhere. And we know that's true. And so our goal is always to just, you know, performance, reliability of the service. And when there's a global event, when something big happens, that's when there's a lot of focus on many tools, but also Twitter. And that's when you want to make sure that the tool is working right, because that's when everyone's going to be looking at it. So it's sort of, to answer your question, you're specifically in those moments, there's a microscope on it. Is it working? you want to make sure, yes. I mean, you always want it to be working, because you never know when something's going to happen. But those moments do put a fine point on it. So I guess you do spend a little bit of time double checking, like, well, is everything good? World event after world event, you know, the US elections recently, the passing of Michael Jackson was a global event. You know, we saw instantly over 2 times the normal tweets per second being both created and sent out. Instantly, you know, like a huge test of the system that was completely unexpected, and that's what you have to be prepared for.
Do you does this feel different to previous enterprises?
Yeah, it's just much faster. Everything about Twitter goes faster. Like I joke with Ev, like I often say, like any decision that you think we're gonna need to make 2 years from now, we'll probably have to make it tomorrow. Everything's been faster. You know, it's grown faster. We move faster. And it's funny because, I mean, I don't think it's almost like it's not unique to Twitter. It's almost like we've just entered an era where things are happening now faster and almost in near real time, or at least with very low latency. And as a result, we need tools to help us make decisions faster. Those decisions can't be sloppy. They need to be still smart. So we need tools that help us operate that. And then Twitter is one of those tools. So it's almost like it's feeding itself. Like, we live in a world now where we need things like Twitter in order to be able to make smart decisions on the fly, and in order to move like a flock of birds around an object.
You don't think it's the other way around, though, that the tools that you've created have helped?
Maybe it is. I mean, it's hard to tell, but doesn't it feel like everything in your life is suddenly moving faster than it did before, too?
I think that's an understatement.
Biz Stone talking to Bobby Johnson. And there's more from Stone and from Bobby in a special edition of our Tech Weekly podcast from San Francisco at guardian.co.uk/techweekly. And don't forget to follow Guardian Daily at twitter.com/guardiandaily. Adam Gabbett and Harriet Grant produced today's edition of Guardian Daily. My name's John Dennis. Thank you for listening.
Guardian Daily. News and reports from around the world.